Hey everyone, big news from the boys of The Last Podcast on the Left.
Check out The Last Comic Book on the Left, our most sinister comic anthology. Ooh. It now has a volume 2.
Please pre-order now at z2comics.com. We have an even bigger stable of artists and talent and writers and everyone that we did for the first one, although the first one is fucking amazing and it's still available on z2comics.com. But we're asking you to go pre-order number 2, z2comics.com.
You're going to like the way you read.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail Guy.
There's no place to escape to.
This is The Last Podcast
on the Left.
From your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
We see the grays down in Africa.
Whoa, this is awesome.
Seeing those grays down in Africa.
I love Toto's new remix.
It's a lonely one.
It really is. Welcome to Last Podcast on the Left, everyone. I am Ben, hanging out with Marcus and hanging out with Henry. By the way, we'll be in Australia in January, where Toto is a real band. And they have more than one song.
I know.
And they listen to it unironically, and they're like, have you heard? Toto's going back on tour. And you're like, wow, I can't believe that they're not all dead.
It's true. There is a Toto extended universe in Australia.
It's very bizarre. Can't wait to see you all there in Australia. Well, speaking of seeing things, today's episode, look to the skies.
Thank you. I'm glad he said it.
The aerial school phenomenon. We're going to get into it.
Very good.
The extraterrestrial encounter at aerial school is one of the most credible examples of high strangeness concerning not just UFOs, but the alien phenomenon at large.
Now, I have been obsessed with this story for a long time.
Wait, what?
This is one of those UFO group sightings, because we've covered a couple of these before, right? The Hudson Valley Triangles. We haven't really covered the Phoenix Lights, but I've done a lot of research into the Phoenix Lights. But and the Coronado Group abduction. Do you remember that?
Yeah, at the
hotel.
Come
here and see my penis. See what they did to my penis. Remember
right,
that guy?
Of course, the ladybugs. You got him.
But this story is, this sends a chill up my spine. And I don't know if it's just because, like, because you say credible, and it is, because there's so many, there's up to 60 witness accounts corroborating what happened on this day. But there's also just something creepy about kids being serious.
Yeah, I don't like it.
And it's endless footage of it. So if you're one of those people that like gets really creeped out in a movie when you see a child going, "Haki tati,"
I don't like it whatsoever. Twins, get out of here.
What was that one movie with Nicole Kidman?
The Others.
Eyes Wide Shut.
The Others.
Okay.
The Others.
What was that line? What was it like? I'm the daddy now. What was it? I'm the daddy now. What was it?
Eyes Wide Shut, by the way, the longest film shoot in history, over 400 days for that big old orgy scene.
Wow.
That is true.
That's true. That orgy scene took 400 days to shoot.
I swear to God, it's the longest consecutive movie ever shot. And that's why Stanley Kubrick died like a day after it was done.
He worked very hard on it. And then they put all those people in front of all the fucking.
I don't know why. All right.
On September 16th, 1994, at least 60 school children between the ages of 6 and 12 reported that a UFO landed just outside of their school near the Zimbabwean capital of Harare during recess. Then two aliens allegedly disembarked and communicated with the children.
Bye. Nike.
Whoa, these guys are really freaking cool. A little bit sounds like the beginning of Black Panther.
This is really fucking frightening. This whole thing is really, really frightening. I had nightmares last night.
You did.
Now, while no adults witnessed the event, the accounts given by children afterward were fairly similar, but inconsistent. However, this is exactly what we want to hear.
Yes.
Why?
See, if these children had collaborated on a story either before or after the alleged event, then their accounts would be virtually identical.
Identical.
Intriguing indeed.
Identical.
But since eyewitness testimony is the least reliable of evidences, the inconsistencies in the children's stories actually makes it more likely that they weren't making it up, because that means they're all remembering the event from their own points of view. In other words, more or less the same is actually better than exactly the same.
According to John Mack, who was a Harvard, he was the head of the psychology department at Harvard.
Yeah, we're going to get into him, definitely.
Oh, yeah. But he ruined his whole career getting involved in this case. And what he says, too, because he says that is what's really interesting and most, that is the most compelling part of this entire tale, is seeing in stereo an event happen. Because he's like, when you hear all the multiple different points of view coming from kids of all different ages, they kind of puts together an entire picture where you see the same story happen, but from 60 different perspectives.
Isn't that interesting? You can always trust a Harvard professor, especially one that's obviously stressed for money. You can almost see him calling Jeffrey Epstein and just being like, I'll give you three more kids. We actually got a bunch in Zimbabwe.
No. This is before. No, this caused him to leave Harvard.
Okay.
And actually, Harvard hated him. Harvard actually tried to take him down. So he was kind of the odd man out at Harvard. So he's not taking any money. All right.
Okay,
he distinctly
died in poverty.
Okay. Yeah. I have been in a different place than I was.
Yes. He's not ordering cheese pizza, Ben. Just so
Oh my God.
Which is why I always got the nude buffalo wings. Because those are for adults.
Well, have a little fun with it. Get some peppers on there anyway.
Well, to the point of being believed, most of the teachers at the aerial school thought that the children were telling the truth when they said a UFO landed and aliens talked to them. And that includes some of the teachers who very much didn't want the children to be telling the truth. There was one woman who said she lived at the school and she really did not want it to be true, but she couldn't help it. She couldn't help but believe them.
In a recent documentary called The Aerial Phenomenon, which was truly blew my fucking mind.
It's great.
It was good. But they do a meeting amongst the teachers talking about the parents' perspective. And they were like, you got to wonder which way the parents are going to go, which way they're going to flip and how we handle it. Because we're not trying to create a divide between the school and the parents. We don't know how they all feel about this group sighting.
Could mess with their religion.
Because distinctly, there was very few adults that saw or heard any of the event. It was all the kids.
And it was just weird when the aliens landed, they offered the kids candy. And it was like, never get into a UFO.
No, they warned about the environment.
Is that right? So I have a question. Did the woman just live in the school and then they made her a teacher? Or did she was a teacher and then she's decided to live in the school?
Have you heard? I did not know, but I actually just read this. I think Betsy DeVos put that in there. There is a squatter's rights provision amongst the Department of Education.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Well, as one journalist put it, if the children were all lying about what they saw, then one of them would have cracked and they would have cracked fast. Because it's not like all these kids were getting positive attention for this.
No.
Because that's one of the things that people talk about with the satanic panic, is that that's how, you know, these children came to make these wild allegations about being flushed down toilets and so on and so forth, is because they kept getting positive validation every single time that they told the story. Like they would be, you know, they would tell the story.
They'd get pulled out of class.
They'd get taken out for ice cream afterwards. They'd get gifts, positive validation over and over again. This was not the case. It was quite the opposite for some of these kids.
Corresponded exactly with the cover of the Ghoulies.
<It does. laughs> But we read the book UFOs Over Africa by Cynthia Hine and that documentary, The Aerial Phenomena, and it really shows the book really shows what it was like to have boots on the ground during the time, at like days after the event. And the documentary shows these kids who are haunted by it.
So they did not have a great
20
time.
Years later, 25 years later, they're all like that's the part of it that really freaked me out, was them. It was one following this one girl that she was the first time going back to her school, to the aerial school, in the 25 years, because it was the 25 year anniversary of the school. And they said they invited her to come back, and she's crying, thinking about, like, I don't want to go relive this whole thing again.
Well, don't go back. You don't got to go to these reunions.
It's a documentary.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that none of these kids ever went back on their story, as much as some of them very badly wanted to forget all about it. The event, as Henry said, still very difficult for these people to talk about. Hmm. One witness in that documentary, she said that she hadn't ever even told her husband about what happened to her at aerial school.
Well, you're going to want to mention that on the first or second date. It's kind of cool. Well,
this is interesting because they have a lot of this perspective, which I feel is now more outdated thanks to what has come about in the last several years, that talking about this in polite society would distance you from them.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of the people said. You know, they said that they never talked about it because people would look at them like they were crazy if they ever did bring it up. So they just sort of pushed it down as hard as they possibly could.
Just jam it down.
Because then what it does is it turns little comedy eggs. That's what emotions do.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that kind of suffering.
Yeah, and that's why sometimes I'll just have a panic attack in the refrigerator. And I wonder, what is that?
Yeah.
What's that one thing?
Henry, you're looking at the sausages. You've been looking for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm thinking about a lot of different things.
Yeah?
It's kind of funny how no one ever asks how the sausage is made. Everyone always asks how the sausage is made, but no one ever asks, why is the sausage made?
Well, the Sawyer family's got to stay in business and Leatherface needs a job.
Now, as far as outside verification goes, Henry already mentioned this guy. The children were interviewed and studied after the fact by a Harvard professor of psychology named Dr. John Mack, who was, at the time, studying the concept of alien abductions from a psychological standpoint. And while Dr. Mack traveled to Zimbabwe with as much skepticism as he could pack, he came away from those interviews absolutely convinced that these children had not only seen a UFO, but had interacted with extraterrestrial intelligences.
Whoa. They saw something, and it was not identified.
I know what I saw.
I know what I saw.
But their children saw.
I know what I saw. But the kids weren't as adamant about it. Kids are just more naturally open.
Interesting.
Now, the aerial school was located in the town of Ruwa, right outside the capital city of Harare in Zimbabwe. And while the surroundings were not particularly wealthy, the aerial school itself was an expensive private institution attended by the children of affluent families.
Or as the head of MUFON Africa, Cynthia Hind, who is the, I would say, the Mrs. Doubtfire of ufology.
Oh, hot flashes.
She's also very similar to Dame Edna.
Dame Edna.
I love Dame.
She does. She has that look. She said, "Oh, would you believe? Oh, well, the school certainly wasn't inexpensive.
Not inexpensive at all. Julia Child's a CIA asset.
Yep.
And of course, if you do make money on OnlyFans, you're assfluent.
This is great. Really great stuff. And I'm glad you saved it. I'm glad you didn't tweet it. I'm glad you saved it here, man.
Yeah, right here. I just share it with the people who I know are going to love it.
Well, small at around 250 students, the aerial school had a student body comprised of an array of multicultural backgrounds, including students from the UK, Europe, Asia, America, Australia, and Zimbabwe itself. As such, the kids tended to interpret the encounter in line with their cultural background, with some children attaching the aliens to native folklore, while others used pop culture as their touchstone. In other words, their brains did the best they could to process the high strangeness that happened in front of them.
From what I could understand, when it was said in that documentary, is that running water was a luxury at the time, and so was electricity. So they didn't actually have a heck of a lot of connection to the pop culture world. I mean, like, they did have some things, but
the
not
American
a heck
kids,
of a lot.
The English kids, they did,
they did. But if you count what Cynthia Hind says about this idea of, and what John Mack actually posited too, because he said that your surroundings and the way you grew up, it creates sort of like a psychic net. It's a psychic world. It's like, it's your whole series of connections. And Cynthia Hind said the people that were kind of more like the lived in the country, they had a more personal relationship with the spiritual. Right.
Yeah.
They viewed these things as not very surprising. And they regularly spoke with the ghosts of their ancestors and spirits and local deities. It was just kind of a part of the fabric of life. And one thing they always talk about is like they did see a lot of like orb activity was like big. Right. People saw a lot of big orange lights.
A lot of orbs. I do have to point out, Marcus diminished your orb story on Open Lines on Sirius Radio. You weren't there to defend yourself.
I didn't diminish it.
Because he wasn't there. And this is the thing about all you fuckers. You don't understand. You have to climb into the head of the witness and think about the witness.
I know, because I did say, because Marcus said, Henry never sees anything. I said, well, he saw an orb. But then Marcus said, oh, he saw an orb.
I did saw it. But even I say that.
I know. Well, that's I only said that because I know what you want to see, Henry.
Yes,
and
of
I know that an orb isn't good enough for you.
No, I want to see it. I literally want to see a craft land on my front yard. I want a big titted alien to come out of it. I want to be like, you're going to be on that Saturday Night Live. Like, that's like what I want to happen. It's not going to happen.
You know what that alien's going to say?
What?
I got nipples. Can you milk me?
And guess what, Kissel? But a lot of them don't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the way that a lot of the locals that they interviewed in that documentary about the aerial phenomenon, the way the locals talked about UFOs was like it's like something that is still cool and surprising, but something they see every day. They'd like go like, oh yeah, yeah, aliens.
Oh, yeah.
Like the same way like in New York or LA, like you describe like seeing a huge landmark every day. Like you just hear you're like, oh yeah, I can see the Empire State Building from my office. Yeah, it's great, but it's cool, but it's still
there.
Very
it's
normal.
Just a
It's just there.
They speak a lot of it as spirits. They equate them to ghosts, and which speaks to my like pan paranormal thesis, which is the idea that they're actually not all very different.
Interesting.
Vindication.
God, well,
every day.
No, you just vindicated yourself.
I fight. I win.
You just said that you were right. Okay.
Well, most of the kids who witnessed these creatures had no knowledge of the alien phenomenon before the sighting, or at least that's what their parents said. In fact, many of these kids, Ben, as you speculated, they were the children of Christian missionaries who believed that aliens did not and could not exist because they weren't mentioned in the Bible.
Also, that they are specifically dog whistles of Satan, and that they're supposed to be there to bring you closer into the science-based world.
Now, I actually watched the History Channel quite a bit, and there is a theory that aliens are indeed angels.
You're becoming my mother. This is when you and my mother have just touched him. You're about to write A Course in Miracles Part 2.
No, you know what I'm going to write?
What?
Angels in the infield. Because I am on fire today, by the way. I don't think I'm going to get enough credit. Yeah, the audience is laughing.
Let me get a fire extinguisher then for the rest
of us. Angels in the infield.
I also want one of our metal bands out there to write an album called Dog Whistles of Satan.
Yes, that's nice. You can't hear them.
It's silent, but trust me, the sound is there.
It's working.
Well, this belief that aliens can't exist was, of course, highly detrimental to some of the children. One child, a 12-year-old Canadian from a highly religious family, had to leave the school and then the country itself because he was so disturbed by what happened. And it was made even worse because his family refused to let him even talk about it.
Yeah.
For most of these kids, the only possible source of information about UFOs came just 2 days prior, when UFO sightings across southern Africa lit up the skies. Now, in this, we've got meat for both the skeptics and for the believers.
I'll tell you what, I received so many phone calls within a 3-day period. I received more phone calls than the time I fell down the flight of stairs. Yeah. My dress was ripped off by the banister.
Is that
in front
right?
of the entire collection of the Sewers Union of South Africa.
Well,
and they
that.
All saw my breasts flop in sweat and
yeah.
they saw the bruises form on my vulva.
Oh my god.
Just
goodness.
In front of them, and then all the calls.
Yeah, your vulva.
But I did, and every single sighting of my vulva, I did write down and get accurate measurements for.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Being a member of MUFON.
Kind of looks like a UFO, doesn't it?
Well, the skeptics might say that these children were all keyed up on aliens because they'd heard their parents talk about these alleged sightings for 2 full days. And after the kids saw something out of the ordinary on the day in question, they got caught up in a mass hysteria and interpreted that out of the ordinary event as aliens.
And wow. I weirdly came across a medical journal written by Kokoda DeMobley that talks about mass hysteria as a kind of, there's like a wave of mass hysteria episodes in African schools in the mid-90s, which I thought was really interesting. Like one was a fainting epidemic where something like it was 50 students out of a population of 765 at a day school. Kids just started fainting in this like weird thing, but they couldn't find anything medically wrong with them. There was an itching spell that happened where a group of people and teachers got involved in this gigantic, like, weird, itchy scenario where people thought an area was making them itchy. No, there was, like, no physical signs. Their skin just got itchy. So it was weird.
Carbon monoxide, maybe. I remember Oprah had quite a scandal.
What? With carbon monoxide?
Or no. She spreading it?
No, with her school that she opened up.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, no, don't trust a television person to open a school.
To do anything.
But the believers will tell you that alien encounters are often preceded by UFO flaps, small and large.
Yep, wink.
And it is precisely because people saw strange things in the sky in the nights leading up to the encounter that we should be more open to believing the children.
Okay.
But concerning those sightings, multiple people across Zimbabwe, South Africa, Botswana, Mozambique, and Zambia all reported seeing strange objects in the sky in the two nights leading up to the incident at Ariel School. Now, at first, these sightings were dismissed as a meteor shower.
And I knew that was impossible because the meteors had just taken a bath.
Oh, isn't that something? As opposed to a meteor shower. That's a great joke, Ben. That's a really great joke there, Kissel. Real funny stuff.
Then it was said that what people had seen was probably the nose cone of a Russian satellite that had fallen out of orbit after being launched a month prior and had crashed as flaming wreckage in both Zimbabwe and Mozambique. But according to African MUFON director Cynthia Hind, the Russian nose cone was not the explanation for the sightings before the aerial incident, but the cause.
It was but the seed.
Whoa.
It was but the shaft of it.
Okay. Also, the Russian nose cone, that's what happens when you're doing analingus and you have your nose in the vagina.
Oh, wait a second. There's some kind of urban dictionary next to me?
The Russian nose cone.
Honestly, I don't know why we're trying to get into it so fast. Come and take me to dinner first.
I'm not doing that to you.
You're doing this to me tonight.
No, that's gross.
Well, Cynthia said she was convinced that UFOs, whatever they may be, they're curious about unusual aerial events such as satellite crashes, in addition to nuclear and missile tests.
I once followed a raccoon for 2 miles, wondering how he ate. He was so chubby and spherical.
Correct? Yeah,
and I saw him, and next thing I know, he had found an entire unlocked dumpster in the back of the Caesar's Pizza.
Oh.
And next thing I know, it looks like I've got my vacation home.
You're going to live in the dumpster, huh?
Delivering the pizza straight to me. I don't even have to call.
That's fantastic.
And to be fair to the skeptic side, satellite crashes and aerial mishaps do often coincide with UFO sightings. However, what you also often get around these mishaps are witnesses reporting sightings that look absolutely nothing like satellites or swamp gases or anything else that's supposed to act as the quote-unquote rational explanation.
Yeah, fucker, yeah. Now throw the quotation marks in there, bro.
Wow.
Fuck yeah. Fucking
Damn,
irrational, bro. Coming at me with fucking rational. Oh, you're my fucking doctor saying, oh, I need to get a fucking colonoscopy, bro?
Absolutely.
Whatever.
Well, that's reasonable anyway.
For example, witnesses near Lake Kariba in Zambia and Zimbabwe said that a couple of nights before the aerial school incident, they saw what appeared to be a Boeing 747 traveling low in the sky, engulfed in flames, and spitting sparks.
And no one's calling about this?
I mean, I would make a phone call or two.
They tried.
But oddly, the craft was totally silent, and those witnesses were only a handful among the 80 or so people who saw odd shit in the sky during those 2 days.
There was a lot of activity, and we don't really know why, but it is strange because Cynthia Hind did research, and there was no meteor shower on the books, right? There was nothing, no activity recorded, and they had no clue what the hell that thing was. And they also were saying, like, as we'll get later on, like, aerial phenomena has telltale signs, right? Like a meteor shower, it's a blink. Like if you've seen a shooting star, it's really fast.
It's cool to see.
It doesn't hover, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't change direction.
It just says the more you know on top of it.
Always.
And it goes in an arc, you know? It doesn't go straight down, yeah.
Yes. Right.
Is it possible that the weather report was cloudy with a chance of meatballs?
I hate. Oh, man. Oh, just always it's 2 steps forward, 5 steps back, man. You know?
Fly from your grave.
A roast as dark as the night
perfect for fueling the cryptid research and mad ravings required for your podcasting. Don't mind the red eyes. He's just trying to warn you of the bridge.
The bridge.
Finally, from the caffeine-addled brains of Springheel Jack Coffee and Last Podcast on the Left, we bring you Mothman's Red Eye Blend. Yes, delicious Panama beans. Go to lastpodcastmerch.com to order yours today.
Now, when it comes to the Aerial School incident specifically, the event occurred at 10:15 a.m. when 60 or so children between the ages of 6 and 12 were outside during recess. The reason why recess was so early that day was because, inconveniently for witness purposes, the school's 13 adult staff members were having a meeting. Therefore, only one adult was in the schoolyard that day, a parent volunteer named Allison Kirkman.
Listen, they were trying to figure out how to fake the moon landing.
I know what they were up to.
They're
also
trying to get back. They're trying to figure it out.
This, you know, there's a lot of scores settled on that playground that day.
Oh,
now,
yeah,
one teacher there, just a parent teacher that's supposed to watch over. They don't know the feuds. They don't know the beefs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's like Washington Heights on 9/11, man. All kinds of shit's going on.
Everybody's getting shipped. That's when all the members of MS-13 are actually 13.
But Allison Kirkman, the only adult out there, she was running the snack bar. And even after a student ran to tell her, come look, there's a fucking alien out there, she refused to leave her post because she was afraid that someone was going to rob the till.
One of you, oh, sicky toad, all your lies. All right, you come and tell me. I know what happened last time. You said, hey, go look, there's a Bigfoot out there. He's asking for you by name.
Yeah.
I get out there, it's just a tall bush. I come back, lollipop's gone.
All the lollipops are gone. I like the strategy, to be honest.
But it is funny because she, in UFOs over Africa, she is hardcore. She's really just saying, like, I will never leave this stand. I don't care what these kids have to say. I don't care if there's a group beating happening.
I mean, she's there to protect all of the candy. Well, it's
but
vital.
But not the children.
Well, the children love the candy.
The rules are in place for a reason. Exactly, Ben.
You're
the
right.
Children love the candy. I guarantee you the reason why she didn't fucking leave her post is because someone had said, hey, there's a zebra over there. And then she runs over there and she comes back and all the fucking Tootsie Rolls are gone. Every single one.
I can't stop five of them. If it's five and one go, they're moving four different directions.
Now, the children said that they were gathered around some brush and overgrown grass near the playing field when they saw something flying near the tops of the trees. One kid said that the aircraft looked natural and that it was shaped like a rock, it reflected light, and it had water dripping from it. Others, however, said that the UFO was definitely disc-like and had a ring of lights either at the top or the bottom of the craft. But in a phenomenon that would apply also to the aliens themselves, one child said that the craft appeared and disappeared multiple times before it finally landed, as if it was shifting in and out of reality.
It was a slow build, too, because as you listen to these kids talk, they kind of set up a scenario where it started as lights, where they kind of saw some lights drift in to view.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them just said, yeah, it looked like, you know, one said it looked like a metallic shimmer. One said that they just saw maroon, right?
Hmm.
They just saw a patch of maroon in the sky, but it slowly coalesced into a shape. And then more people started seeing the shape as well. And then different shapes. But it's weird how it just like, it's like it became solid as they were watching it.
Well, perhaps it was getting aroused.
Yeah.
So again, now he's actually just accusing a craft to be a pedophile. Like he's just saying a
that's how far
object
it's gone.
Is a pedophile.
That's how far it's gone. Yes, a high strangeness object, you know, some otherworldly dimensional thing.
Craft thing?
Oh. Probably a pedophile.
Get me.
Stupid arguments, folks. Tactical death. Flight of the Navigator. Did that not court a very young, young man?
I don't know. I don't know. Your stepson's going to hear a lot about this.
Well, another kid said that the ship disappeared and reappeared three times. And he and the others said that the larger craft was also surrounded by three or four smaller objects. But since the UFO was shining with such an intense bright light, it was hard to get a look at the satellite craft.
Hmm.
Once it got closer to the ground, there came the noise. The kid said that it buzzed loudly with a high-pitched frequency, a sound that one girl described as, quote, machine bees,
yeah,
which got bigger and louder as it got closer. Once the craft landed, the buzz was replaced by a quiet whirring noise.
God, that's aggravating.
Fun noises with the boys.
That's not fun noises. That was the dryer's done. I hate doing laundry.
But the bright light that accompanied the flight did not stop. From what the kid said, though, time seemed to become distorted, and they sat there for a few terrifying minutes waiting for something to happen. But as far as what the kids were feeling went, many, but not all, said that they felt excited, scared, and happy all at the same time.
This is why it's so difficult to be a parent. Your kid feels excited, scared, and what was the other one?
Happy.
All at once.
I don't know. That's how I felt. Right before I ate like half of a bone marrow pie.
I knew you were going to mention your bone marrow pie. You're not allowed to eat it anymore.
My chest
Democracy,
hurts.
Triangle of trust. Marcus, is he allowed to eat bone marrow pie anymore?
I got two more left in me.
Two more?
Before the doctor cuts me off at some point.
Oh my God.
Well, excited, scared, and happy. That's a roller coaster. You know, those are the sorts of things. Like, when you're going tick, 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 like, you know, you're happy, you're there, you're excited, you don't. Because that's what the little girl described it as, the one who said scared, happy, and excited. She said that she didn't know what was going to happen next, but she wanted to know what was going to happen next.
She also had the idea in her head to say, like, I also knew I was seeing something that nobody's ever seen before.
That's cool.
Like she said this kind of like an understanding of like, oh, this is fucking weird.
Right.
Yeah. This is wee-wee-weird.
This is weird.
But when the next noise came, some of the kids reacted immediately in terror. It's not the noise you would expect.
Okay.
They said that the whirring noise was replaced with something that sounded like a flute. But the flute noise actually drew the children closer to the craft.
Can we get a little bit of a flute noise so we can have something to compare it to? We should actually put in some sample of Jethro Tull.
Jethro Tull, they beat Metallica, best metal album of the year.
We'll always be mad about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then, multiple creatures, either two or three, depending on what child you asked, departed from the craft. Again, the descriptions of the creatures varied from child to child, although all the descriptions were within reasonable parameters of comparison.
I mean, this is where it gets fucking crazy, because they all came out looking like fucking Kanye 2022.
Yeah.
It's all the all black, you like, got big boots.
Interesting. I mean, this is why the jury system is innately flawed.
Yes.
But that's
okay. memory in and of itself is right. Technically an absolute way to look at reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, this is all about memory, you know, and this is about trying to put together a full story from many different eyewitness accounts, because that's what you say, reasonable parameters of comparison. One kid said that he saw a little 3 foot tall man dressed in a black shiny suit sporting long black hair.
Hey kids, hey, what's going on? In from out of town, hey.
I know.
No autographs, okay? I'm just trying to get milk, right?
Mr. Big.
You playing with those jacks?
Yeah. Record contract, sweet.
The eyes, which were much lower on the cheek than ours, were large and elongated. Classic alien gray eyes.
Down the grays, down in Africa.
However, the eyes were described by one child as having a rough texture, like American footballs. That one creeps me out. I love that one.
That's weird.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, if you look at like a close up of like a fly's eyeballs, they do appear as if they have that rough texture. And so that's how I imagine these to look like.
Every night I look at my fly, I look at it right in the eyes.
What are you talking about? Sucking your own dick?
No, I have a pet fly.
Yeah. What's his name?
Herb.
Let's just not go into his fucking dumpster version of Snow White, because I don't know what his life is like in that home.
I have a pet ant. I have a pet fly.
You need an exterminator.
Yeah.
Well, continuing in the alien gray vein, some of the consistent descriptions of the creatures were that their mouths were slits, the ears could hardly be seen, and the noses were almost non-existent. But drawing perhaps upon their cultural backgrounds, some of the local kids believe that these creatures were evil goblins.
Whoa.
Specifically, the infamous Tokoloshe.
Yeah, the Tokoloshe. We've covered the Tokoloshe here and there. It has come up into our writings before, and we'll get into it again, but you're not supposed to be, like, super close to a Tokoloshe.
Okay.
It's very scary. A lot of the kids were really afraid that the things were going to eat them.
Don't get too close to the Tokoloshe.
Well, the Tokoloshe is it Tokoloshe or Tokoloshe?
I don't know.
Tokoloshe?
Tokoloshe sounds like a guy who's like purposefully mispronouncing it from he's from Ohio.
Yeah, it sounds like Luigi's Plumber or something.
Well, the Tokoloshe is a small, evil, mischievous, gremlin-like creature of Zulu folklore, sometimes used to scare children into behaving, i.e. be good or the Tokoloshe will come eat you or choke you to death in your sleep.
Whoa.
He's like the lechusa or the boogeyman.
Doesn't the Tokoloshe, I believe, also steals your penis? Common fear. I believe the Tokoloshe comes and he takes your sexual prowess as well.
He just takes your penis, huh?
I do know that it is one folk belief that if you put your bed on bricks, like if you put your bedstand on bricks, then it's going to make the bed too high for the Tokoloshe to climb up on, so the Tokoloshe isn't going to steal your penis or choke you to death while you sleep.
Oh, it can extend its own penis to any length.
Isn't that nice?
The Tokoloshe is a single buttock.
Any length.
First, you must summon the Tokoloshe. Why are we doing this? You can see his huge penis.
What do you mean it has one butt?
It has because it can extend it to impregnate women.
But any length means that can it reach from here to the sun? Can it explore outer space?
I don't know.
Don't have sex with the sun. That's just weird. One butt. Where's the hole go?
It's just one mound.
That's weird.
Well, as a side note, Tokoloshes are sometimes said to be created by witch doctors, much like the golems of Jewish folklore. In this case, a client will call on a witch doctor and ask him to take vengeance on an enemy using a Tokoloshe.
Okay, let me see how many Tokoloshes we got available. are you good for the next Tokoloshe we got Monday at 4?
Monday at 4
is revenge. Is your friend you're going to hold until Monday at 4?
That works for me.
Yeah, we'll be sending Hernando over. You should go and hit him up. We'll send him. He'll text you 30 minutes out.
And he'll do the dick lasso?
We'll have to add a surge to that surge pricing. Because that's big right now.
I really hate this guy. He's a mean guy.
Yeah, well, right now, Hernando's penises is in San Diego. So we're actually going to need... if you're going to need a penis... You need penis lasso?
Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday is good. I got a Wednesday.
This guy on Wednesday, too.
Yeah. So the window is 8 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Oh, God dang it. That's a whole day, huh?
Yeah.
Well, the witch doctor agrees. But he says that the Tokoloshe will only take vengeance in exchange for a human soul that will be chosen by the Tokoloshe after the job is over and done with.
Oh, man, can't it just, like, love chocolate or diamonds or something?
No, dog.
Nope, it's got to take a soul. It's going to take your mother's soul or your sister, your brother, someone close to you.
It's going
to
be, ironic twist, and it's going to be bad. And because revenge is bad.
Yeah.
It can
and once
be.
The terms are agreed upon, the witch doctor finds a dead body. He pierces the eye sockets and brain with a hot rod of iron so that it cannot think for itself. Then he sprinkles it with a special powder to shrink the body down to Tokoloshe size.
Sweet. You'd save money on a casket that way.
Yeah, man.
The Tokoloshe then does what it does, then takes its chosen soul weeks, months, or even years later.
It's hard to be a freelancer.
I guess so.
Now, in full disclosure, I did take all of that information from the creation section of the Tokoloshe Wikipedia page, which was rife with capitalization and punctuation mistakes.
Hmm.
And it definitely had a big citation needed note right next to that whole witch doctor paragraph.
If you can tell us how to do an absolute foolproof Tokoloshe, sidestorieslpotl@gmail.com, we're going to make one.
Absolutely. Why not? I'll shrink you down.
But I did find another source that said that if you want to avoid the wrath of the Tokoloshe and make friends with it, all you have to do is cut the long hair that hangs over his face and feed him a little saucer of curdled milk.
You mean to tell me you got to give him bangs?
You just got to make it Zooey Deschanel and then now we're friends?
Yeah, and give him curdled milk.
I'm not giving it in a ukulele, all right?
I'll give it curdled milk, though. I got curdled milk lying around.
I know that.
That's for damn sure.
Now, considering how the Tokolosh is indeed a fearsome little goblin, you can understand why some of the kids at the aerial school might have been afraid that those creatures had arrived for the sole purpose of eating them. But mixed with that fear, some said, was a feeling of excitement and happiness. Similarly to the folkloric association some of the children made with the aliens, some of the other kids, whose worldview was more informed by pop culture, later told their teachers that the aliens looked like Michael Jackson.
That's ignorant.
Oh, no.
That's ignorant. I bring the children to me.
Does Michael need this? He's already got a lot going on. A lot of people are saying he's been in the bad spots. Maybe he doesn't need to be blamed for being an alien.
I don't need to travel for the children. They're so they get premium delivery straight to my monkey.
Oh, my lordy.
And indeed, another kid described during an interview she did recently that the alien skin looked plastic, like someone who'd done too much Botox. Another said that the skin looked smooth, as if it might slide off at any second. And, you know, and that's something that we've seen. This sounds somewhat like a Men in Black description.
It is very eerie. Well, because as I've gotten older, the kids, like, you know, Cynthia Hine believes that your memory becomes more crystalline as you get older, which I don't know if it's true or not.
I don't know
whether or not if you look back and if you remember harder, like,
I think you just remember wrong stuff more.
You're just, yeah. I think you're filling out the memory with what you think you remember quite often. But the kids all, like, one of them says straight up, like, I need to remember this forever because I know how important this story is. And so you could see them running this time and time again. But the one thing that comes out is that, yeah, it's Men in Blacky. It's very weird. What they're saying is hyper-specific. And also, what we talk about with grays all the time, they had their little jumpsuits on.
Aww. Yeah.
Then the aliens began moving, which was possibly the most disconcerting thing to all of the children. One kid that she saw one of the aliens run through the grass, but it seemed as if it was not really affected by gravity. Instead, she said it moved fluidly, as if gravity did not affect it at all. Another, however, said that the alien ran in slow motion, like an instant replay. And in fact, some of the kids said that everything seemed to be moving in slow motion, even though they said that their hearts were still beating as fast as they could go.
That's really interesting.
If you believe in the witness stories of people talking about the Hopkinsville goblin story, which we've covered here and there, and our friends in Newkirk's did their whole special on the Hellier project examining it. But like that idea of they are not bound by our physics in any way. There is something about them that is, it looks like it's a projection onto our reality in some way, yeah. And that they're kind of behaving in an almost cartoon manner where they can bounce.
Yeah, and to that point, one kid said that she perceived the action of the alien running as a loop, like watching a movie. The creature would run from one side of the grass to the other, then it would disappear and reappear where it started, and it would go through the motion over and over and over again.
Weird. Is it possible that the gravity on their planet is a little bit more strict or strong, and that's why they're so short, and that's why here it's almost like they're on the moon?
Interesting.
One of the girls did say that it wasn't quite like the bouncing that, you know, you see astronauts do on the moon. Like, it was something, she said it was like gravity didn't affect them at all. You know, it wasn't really bouncy. It was just like Henry said, like they were projected here. You know, like they were here and not here all at the same time. Like the rules just didn't apply to them.
Wow.
It's dream logic.
Yeah. Finally, though, the creatures communicated directly with the children.
This is it. It's freaky. Yeah. I don't like that.
Using telepathy, they brought a message of ecological protection, saying the same thing that aliens always say to us, that we're destroying the Earth, that we don't know what we're doing, and so on and so forth.
I didn't know I was going to be dealing with a bunch of lib turds. You alien, hey, alien cock.
I could just see the libertarian getting brutally probed again and again. You're like, am I paying for this?
But while that is indeed a cliche in alien abduction communication, I don't know how many times we've said on this show that that's the fucking message the aliens bring to people again and again. It's interesting here for the fact that these children would have had no clue that this was a common, if not near universal message delivered during these encounters. And yet, this is universally what the children said the message was from day one. Well, specifically, some children said that they received messages telling them to protect the Earth from man-made destruction, while others said they got an explicitly anti-technology message, like an extraterrestrial version of industrial society in its future.
That would be scary. Very long.
Interesting.
Very, very long.
Yeah, is it worth it to have your TikTok if it's going to ruin the dang world?
It's not. It's not. But they said they didn't hear voices. Again, these things were just sort of, they said it was a feeling. It was impressed upon them.
Yeah. Still others said that they received something beyond messages. They were given images, thousands of them, all showing the consequences of environmental destruction that we're now showing worldwide because nobody listens to a bunch of children when they say aliens told them that we're destroying the fucking Earth. I don't know why they don't go to somebody in power. They're always talking to some dad in Florida or some housewife in Massachusetts telling them that they got to, or it's a bunch of kids in Zimbabwe saying, hey, we got to get the fucking Earth back on track. And that's not the people that have the power to change those things.
When you go, you know, when you talk to people in power and then they explain to you how Exxon is just really important to their campaign.
Yeah.
And without Halliburton on board, we just don't see how we're going to get to power. If you're legitimately the aliens, go to children. I actually think it makes sense to go to children.
I could see any senator and of any political party, if you have an alien in front of them, they're still going to be like, well, you can't vote. So it doesn't even really matter what you say to me. Yeah. I don't really care. And actually, I don't really care what anybody says to me. I'm going to do whatever somebody pays me to
do. I'm a senator. It's West Virginia. We like fucking coal, okay? I need to stay a senator. You get it, alien.
Have the aliens take over the airwaves. Put together a PowerPoint presentation.
Go well when the War of the Worlds aired. I don't think people handled it very well, Marcus.
I just don't know if PowerPoints are going to be the thing that fixes everything. I think what they need to do is...
If they have a fucking PowerPoint, I'm not going to trust her from the future.
Absolutely not.
Live from your grave.
Hey, what's up, everyone? How you doing? Ben Kissel here with Henry Zebrowski.
Yeah, it's me, man.
Yeah, bro. Henry Zebrowski is smoking some of that sweet last podcast on the left, babe. Go out there and purchase yourself some. I hope you enjoy it. We have sativa, we have indica, and we have a hybrid. And I have to tell you, from my personal experience, they are wonderful.
Super tasty live resin. You really get the delicious, weedy taste, which is what I like. And yes, three different experiences. You go to your local vape store and get it.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We absolutely love you. Can't wait to see you on the road and get that vape, put it in your brain, and have a good time.
And if you want us at your favorite weed store, give them a call and ask for them by name.
Absolutely.
Last podcast on the left, it's weed.
Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan.
Now, as far as how long this encounter lasted, the children said that they weren't sure because, as I said, time was greatly distorted during the encounter.
Yeah.
Some said that it lasted only a few minutes, while others estimated that it lasted closer to 15.
Yeah, the one teacher that was involved, he said 15 minutes, but, you know, you never know. Again, he said the same thing. He was transfixed.
Well, it's relative, isn't it? If you're waiting 90 seconds for your food to get done, it's different than holding your breath for 90 seconds.
Actually, I feel the same for both of those.
Well, one, you're going to start to get panicky. Well, no.
I get panicky and upset and ready.
But you
I
know what I'm saying. A second is
but not,
different.
I actually don't know.
A second of bliss versus a second of pain. The bliss goes faster.
Unless it's Hellraiser time. One of the things that is truly frightening about this entire recollection, right? So it started with the lights, and the kids are seeing it, and then the noises started, and then the panic set in. I think that was what really got me, is that the aerial phenomenon documentary really set the tone of how scary this was for the kids. Some of them ran and went screaming, but some of them were transfixed by the creatures. Like, now we know that they're communicating to them, right? But it's more like the way they talked about being transfixed by their eyes. There was one little boy that said when he was looking into it, it was like the thing turned and looked at him.
Yeah.
Made eye contact with him. He said it made like a face. And he said the only way you could describe it is that he felt terrified. And he told Dr. John Mack that it looked like an old lady who had never seen a child before.
Yeah.
And then he was like squinting at him.
Yeah,
and then
squinting
another
inquisitively.
Squinking like doing a head spin. The stranger's head tilt.
Don't like it.
And then the other one, another little girl was like, it felt like she said the term, they want us. And then they're like, well, what do you mean? And it's not just licky lick. It's like they want human children. They want to connect to them. Like they're looking at them as basically saying straight up, well, we don't raise generations of people believing that you're destroying the planet. Mm-hmm. Then eventually you just will.
Yeah.
And the most horrifying thing of all, the candy store, they only had Baby Ruth.
That woman stayed there the entire time. Children are running and screaming. Literally, it could have been anything. It could have been a shooter. It could have been like children. And she's just sitting there being like, these fuckers think they're going to distract me.
Kids got time to plot.
They do.
But once the aliens climbed back into the ship, it seemed as if the spell that they put over all of the children had been broken. Once the mechanical bee sound started back up, the children's collective terror, every single one of them, it became palpable, and they ran back to the school to find an adult to tell what they'd just seen. But of course, the parent volunteer told the children, including her daughter Fifi, to pull the other leg.
I'll pull the other leg.
What do you mean, pull the other leg?
It means it's
pull the other one. It's got bells on. That's, you know, an old, the other zone. Pull the other one. You know, you pull him in leg.
You pull him in leg.
It's like one of the worst toy lines of all time, the Hook toy line.
What?
The Hook? Hook? The movie Hook?
The movie?
Well, yeah.
Do you remember Captain Hook? He had extended legs. You could extend his legs to make him taller.
No.
It was
no.
Trash. It was a trash toy.
So you have decided to, after these decades have passed, you've decided now's the time to take the Hook merchandising world down a peg.
It was a trash series of toys.
Okay. Understandable that you might be disappointed about it.
He just got taller.
It's just amazing of all of the things in the world that are currently happening that Kissel's still vehemently upset at this toy.
I remember, and I only got one a week. And there were $5 each. That was my toy for the fucking week.
That was it. And that's what you were so mad about, is that your new toy wasn't good enough
for that week. It didn't even go with any of my other toys.
Then why did you get it?
I liked having
because
the Pantheon of toys.
Because I thought it was going to be cool. Guys, I also just watched Hook and I liked the movie.
But you didn't have a Pantheon of toys? I always mixed up G.I. Joes, TMNT. I put them all together, one big world. They all fought and they all railroaded April O'Neil.
Oh my goodness. Mr. Zabrowski.
She
that's
loved
not
it.
Right.
She can do
it. No, she would only like it if it was Raphael, but she ended up with Casey Jones because he's a person.
Yes. Well, the thing is, after the parent volunteer said, I don't believe you, they didn't stop there, which is probably what they would have done had it just been a prank. Miss, there's an alien out there. Like, if she would have said no, they would have just, you know, put their heads down and say, oh, right, I'm just going to go over here now. But no, they fucking panicking and screaming. They ran and interrupted the teacher staff meeting, hoping that some adult would tell them what to do. Now, the aerial school incident was not a sort of hearsay occurrence in which a lone MUFON ufologist interviews the kids years afterwards as adults. The incident occurred on a Friday, and by the following week, news outlets all over the world picked up the story, and the children began giving interviews.
And you know for a fact, even in a crowd, a MUFON ufologist is alone, aren't they?
He is, man. We walk alone. Yes. And then she is. Look at Cynthia Hind, man. She's too busy for a man.
Self-published.
Too busy. I mean, absolutely too emotionally distant for a woman.
Yeah.
She is focused on her goal and ready to get out there and get to the bottom of this. And it's true. They were out there like days later.
Wow.
Because she got called up because, again, my phone just absolutely was tremendous, the amount of response that the children had. And I was just like, oh, someone find my clothes.
Yes, ma'am, your vulva's hanging out.
I've already put that down in the visitation book.
Oh,
but no, they went right there and they closed up shop. That was the goal. So the MUFON investigators arrived. They were like, all right, we're going to close this up, make sure that nobody else is talking to these kids until we're done with them.
Okay.
But before you say that the kids collaborated over the weekend on some fanciful tale, the headmaster...
I think the kids collaborated over the weekend on a fanciful tale.
No, before you say that.
I think I said it.
Yes.
Colin Mackey, the headmaster, he had the children draw what they saw on the same day that the event occurred.
This is really interesting. They jumped right into this.
Wow. Yeah, immediately. And just like later testimonies, the drawings were similar but not exact. In some cases, there was only one craft drawn, while in others, you'd see two or three. Same thing with the number of aliens depicted, anywhere between one and three. And similarly, some aliens were drawn with that long, flowing black hair, and some weren't. Mm-hmm. But what was most consistent across all the drawings was the shape and appearance of the alien creatures, who showed all the markers of being your classic alien Grays.
Whoa.
It was straight down the line. Everybody said that they had saw the same weird teardrop-shaped head,
right.
Tiny body, huge eyes. They all said it, and they didn't have the cultural reference.
No.
Like, they did not have Whitley Strieber's communion to know that's what we think aliens look like.
No, this is this is not like 1999 in a Spencer's Gifts. They haven't seen like the ever-present 90s alien head for years upon years.
They
this is completely
seen.
Outside of their cultural milieu.
And as everybody who has had problems with these episodes in the past or in the future, anybody talking about ufology, you're talking about UFOs or ghosts, the paranormal, like, I feel like that's, again, they're like, well, right there. They're all seeing something different. But do you not know how often we all, like, you see in the movie fucking Rashomon, right?
Yeah.
We all will remember things differently because you arrive at something with a story, with a background, even as a kid. And also, I believe that the trickster edge of the phenomena plays with you as well. And it's about you being interpreted. You know, like the one time I did that mushroom tea, I fucking went all the way back to this back of my fucking mind, and I talked to the dude from the Big Lebowski, and he explained to me that fucking all, like, our reality is just a program dropped into an operating system.
You talked to the dude or the man?
The dude.
You talked to the dude.
Right? And fucking, our brains can interpret it. Like, our reality is interpretive. Like, we make it up as we go.
Well, I want to thank you for coming to our town hall committee meeting, Henry Zebrowski, on why we need to teach.
And that's why parking violations shouldn't exist.
Yes, and that's why we will take it into consideration teaching both sides of the Holocaust. So thank you so much. Thank you.
No, I just want to be able to park wherever my car fits.
Two sides to every story, two sides. And actually, stricter parking rules. But two sides to every story.
You know, Ben, you do laugh, but in college, I did once show up to a libertarian meeting on mushrooms and gave a speech much the same as the one that Henry just gave.
I believe it. Yeah. I believe it. And that's when the libertarians, that's where they were a big tent party.
Yeah.
We also have clueless assholes.
Yeah, yeah. Wandering in from the park to the local coffee shop into this meeting with my buddy Clint. Was like, hey, why don't you come inside?
And it's like, yeah, I'll fucking come inside, but you're about to go outside while you're inside. You know what I mean?
I don't know what you're talking about. No.
Now, the first investigator on the scene was, as Henry said, had a MUFON in Africa, the aforementioned Cynthia Hind. She began conducting interviews with children on September 20th, but headmaster Colin Mackey put a stop to these interviews a few months later because it was greatly affecting the mental health of his students.
Also, if you just the back of this book, this is just an example of Cynthia Hind's style.
Cynthia Hind always upholds the highest standards of the scientific researcher. She remains unflappable, virtually foolproof, but open-minded to the end. Her trademark is the extended and repeated interview, where heretofore unretrieved and forgotten facts are often brought to the subject's conscious mind by a gentle and persistent prodding.
This
is the back of the book.
Judging by that picture, she's definitely flappable, but
yeah.
Hey, when you're all flaps, it's like there's no flaps.
None at all.
And, you know, and that is one of the criticisms of this story, is that some people do say that Cynthia Hind went in there like a fucking Tasmanian devil and completely fucked up everything.
Dog on a bone.
Yeah, that she made it, her influence made it impossible to truly look at this entire thing objectively. But the man who did know what he was doing was Dr. John Mack.
Yes.
See, Dr. John Mack was not only a professor of psychology at Harvard. We mentioned him at the very beginning of the episode. He was the head of the psychiatry department at Harvard Medical School, and he was trained in both adult and child psychiatry and psychoanalysis. Additionally, he also won a Pulitzer Prize for writing a psychological biography of Lawrence of Arabia. This guy knew his shit.
Okay.
See, starting in the early 90s, Dr. Mack had become fascinated with the psychology of alien abductions, standing on the shoulders of such giants as Dr. Ronald Sprinkle.
And I will show the whole world that we will make butterscotch telepathic.
Awesome. Thanks, Dr. Sprinkle.
Oh, I'd miss Dr. Sprinkle.
I love Dr. Sprinkle.
Well, initially, Dr. Mack believed alien abduction to be simple mental illness. That's all there is to it. But he found again and again that the people he interviewed had no obvious pathologies. Instead, he found that there was a more spiritual and ethereal quality to what we know as alien abduction.
Yeah, because I don't know if collecting gems fits in the DSM-4. Like, I don't know if that's right. A symptom of illness. I mean, it struck all of our mothers. Yeah. All of our mothers have the... I'd like to call it tchotchke AIDS, where it's just this immunosystem. I don't know what it is, where they just collect snowmen and witches and pelicans. And
we still have all the Hummels that were supposed to really go up in value, but they decreased immensely.
Very much so. No one cares about them.
No one cares.
And so when Dr. Mack heard about the aerial school incident, he took a plane to Zimbabwe and began interviewing every child who was willing to speak with him. And by the time he was done, he was staunchly convinced that these children were telling the truth. He said that as a psychiatrist, it was his job to distinguish between psychosis like mass hysteria and actual reality. And based on the information he gleaned from these interviews, he concluded that an extraterrestrial encounter did indeed occur in Zimbabwe in 1994.
And if you want a compelling book, Johnny Mack's Abductions is fantastic.
Well, when you say it like Johnny Max, it sounds like he's in Mortal Kombat.
John E. Mack, but I feel like he did it. I feel like there was some other John Mack he had to differentiate himself from. But his book's fantastic.
Cool.
Yeah. But Dr. Mack also paid a heavy professional toll for daring to buck established beliefs. And he almost lost his job because he dared to even be curious about something so supposedly silly as alien abduction.
I just find it interesting that they hated this topic and they felt that it lowered the reputation, that affected the reputation of Harvard Medical School.
As opposed to all the gangbang societies they had, but like also, Skull and Bones.
Yeah,
and
I mean, they all just suck each other's dick and then become president.
Right.
There's also the entire world of theology. They have a full theology department. Mm-hmm, so it's okay to talk about the fake man in the sky, but it's not okay. And I understand the cultural implications of it, but I feel like it's fits right under it. It goes right under the umbrella. If we're going to talk about the cultural implications of our beliefs and the historical implications of our beliefs, you can't take this out of it.
I have heard that aliens are angels in and I hear that they're playing in the infield.
Mrs. Marianne Williamson, if you could please leave us all alone.
Oh, she's sweet.
Well, I think the problem that Harvard had was not, if he was some sort of cultural anthropology professor talking about aliens, like say among the Dogon people of Africa. You know, if he's
very
talking about
very compelling,
very compelling. But if he's talking about it from a cultural anthropology perspective, they're not going to have any problem with it. Their problem was that this was the head of the psychiatry department, and he's not talking about it from the perspective of this is a cultural phenomenon. These people just have something going on with them that has nothing to do with the real world. He's saying like, no, there is something very real to this that we got to look into. And we're doing a disservice to the entire world by not looking into it. It's basically how we have now, how soft disclosure has come about, where people are finally saying, like, no, look, there are UFOs in the sky. There is shit flying around. We're not doing anybody any favors by pretending like it's not happening.
Yeah,
and
that's crazy.
And John Mack was saying the exact same thing.
Same shit. And because honestly, because they really wanted to get back, they really wanted to make more time for them because they had a whole course that they wanted to do, which they felt this was eating into, called Why Dudes Rock.
Why Dudes Rock?
And it was just like Sammy Hagar. It was the science of Sammy Hagar and the Red Rocket.
Seriously.
And then they have a whole long thing about like, are clitorises real?
That's something.
One of the turns out, no.
No.
No. No.
That's what they landed on. But wow. It's Harvard.
I don't
so,
know.
You know.
Much like an electric car, nothing under the hood.
There is something. It's not just empty. It doesn't run on magic.
It's not empty. No, an electric car?
Yeah.
No, that's storage. That's where they put the storage.
Well, as far as the children themselves went, most of them were, to put it mildly, massively fucked up by their experiences.
Yes.
Making it worse was the fact that just after the incident, Zimbabwe sort of fell apart through economic and social collapse, and the children were scattered to the winds with no one else to talk to about what happened. It has only been recently that these people have been willing to come forward to talk about their experience, and they look just as bewildered and frightened talking about it today as they did when they were interviewed as children in 1994.
That's what brings me back.
It's the fear associated with it and how deeply it all affected their lives. They are traumatized. Whatever happened that day, I will always kind of give the back door, like, we don't know if it's extraterrestrial necessarily, right? Yeah. I don't know what that means, right? Mm-hmm. But whatever happened, fuck these kids up. And yeah, they're not letting it go, because it was also the parents' front, because what seemed to double their trauma was the parents' reactions to the kids, because the teachers were all just as freaked out as anybody else, yeah, because these kids rolled up and they're all saying the same thing, tears streaming down their face, saying, we saw these things out in the field, and they don't know what the fuck to do. So, no, but half of them saying, like, it didn't exist, that traumatizes you. The other ones getting all freaked out and screaming, like, we're all gonna die. That also fucks with you. Right. It's very difficult.
And, of yeah, course, Henry only gives the back door on Oink Oink Saturdays. That is where he gets on all fours.
You say to our whole, that's all he heard.
That's all he heard was back door. That was the first thing you said, Adam. And I had a salient point to make that was going to build upon your point.
Sure.
And then Oink Oink Saturdays.
You're talking about a conversation, like a free-flowing intellectual meeting of the mind.
Yeah. I don't even remember what it was anymore. Now all I remember is Oink Oink Saturdays. So.
And this is why Republicans win elections. Like, this is the exact problem we're seeing.
Where's the lube? It's Saturday. It's Oink Oink Saturday. Oink Oink.
He's owning the narrative.
Well, what I was going to say is that, you know, the teachers, most of them did believe them. The headmaster of the school, you know, as much, he very reluctantly would say, like, yeah, it happened. Something happened. And weird. John Mack, you know, and these parents are all bewildered as well, you know, and there was, that showed in the documentary, there was this, like, basically a PTA meeting where John Mack, you know, all these parents come and John Mack just goes up and says, hi, very happy to be here. Probably don't want to hear this, but yep, it was aliens. Yep.
You see these teachers all like, oh, fuck. Oh, yeah. God, how are we going to fucking get our funding next year if there's aliens everywhere?
You might get more funding. Who knows?
Yeah. And for me, it's like, it's not necessarily the fear that gets me, because, you know, there is something to be said about, you know, fear traveling with you throughout the years. It's the bewilderment. That's what gets me, like, on what? The interviews. Like, oh, what? Like, still just totally, like, I don't get it. I don't understand. Because it hasn't, because, you know, Cynthia Hine uses the word crystallized, that their memory crystallized over the years. Feels like, to me, like it hasn't crystallized at all.
No, they're all just as frightened and just as scarred by it. Because, again, it's an example of, you're met with the moment of the extreme mysterious, right? This is, there is no explanation. There is none. Whatever none. It was, maybe it all existed in a ripple of mass hysteria. That's just as mysterious as it is as aliens. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, where the fuck did it come from? They didn't make up the story. They did not, like, I looked it all up. I dug in. I looked to see for any kid to, like, say, like, at least one to say, we made it up. Somebody made it up.
Right.
Nate won't back off of it.
No.
And I don't think it's like the sunken thing either. I don't think it's like a cult mentality where you're trying to, it's like, oh, well, I gave up my life to the story. Most of them have not said anything about the story since they were a child.
Right.
So while the Ariel School incident is not necessarily a home run when it comes to proving the alien phenomenon, it's still one of, if not the most compelling case of an alien encounter in modern history.
I believe
it. All right. 1994.
I believe it. I'd say, you know what this is?
Not that long ago.
This is an in the park home run. Yeah. Because, yeah, officially it's not a home run, but if you hustle for it, you can get in there.
And a couple of different mistakes have to be made usually.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yes.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, there it is. The Ariel Phenomenon. UFOs Over Africa is the name of the book, so check that out.
No, this is it's out of print. We spent a lot of money on this book.
It is?
Yeah, we actually, this actually costs money.
How much money did you spend on that?
Enough.
Yeah. How much money did the company money? How much company money did you spend on that book?
Enough.
Enough. Marcus, do you know the cost of this book?
Yeah, but it's enough.
You know? Do you remember
But
do you remember when Kissel accidentally extended his own hotel room for a week?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? When he did that in a weird decision you made in the middle of the night where you extended your hotel? So I would say this is equivalent. I think the book we purchase is equivalent.
Yeah, I think so. But do check out the Aerial Phenomenon documentary that's that is available at aerialphenomenon.com. It's fantastic. It's one of the best UFO documentaries, and it's well made too. It's very, very well made. It's not a bunch of horse shit like these people.
And if you can extend your hotel, extend your hotel. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know the situation you're talking about, but I believe it.
I remember it exactly. I don't remember the city, but I do remember getting the call of like, "Hey, so Ben extended his hotel for an extra 5 days. Do you guys know what that's about? Do you know what's going on with that?"
It was a mystery, and you know what? We got to the bottom of it.
What is it?
You know what I'd say again? A moment of the extreme mysterious. What is the man's motives? I don't know. I'll never know. Because you ended up home the same time as we all ended up home.
Yeah.
We had, because we had like the Monday day. We had a meeting and we had a record. So you were there for all of that. You made it.
I must have made a mistake. Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening.
All right, what we got here? We got San Diego Comic Con. We're going to fucking be there.
Can't wait.
Friday. We are there. 10:30 a.m. It is us. The three of us, us chuckleheads.
That's right.
David Dasmalkin, who is Vic Tilton. He's going to be, we're going to be in, do you know what room we're in?
Room 10.
Room 10. That's
easy room to remember.
Come on down the room, the waters fade. And then we got signings after that. Yep. We have a signing on Saturday. We're going to be out there. Very, very excited.
Can't wait.
Also, come see Ed Larson and I at Classy Night Out, the Pack Theater, July 26th, 9 p.m., $10 tickets. We're going to have a good time with it.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful little theater. It's fun to get back into the blank box. All right. Anything else? Obviously, we got our European tour. I'm sure you guys have heard those ads. Check that out.
Don't forget, that's going to be in October. We're going to be in the Netherlands. We're going to be in the UK and Ireland. And don't forget that we're going to be in Australia this January. So go to lastpodcastontheleft.com for all of the dates and ticket links for those shows. Make sure you get tickets, because all that shit sold out last time and it's probably going to sell out again. So make sure to get your tickets now.
Thank you all so much for supporting all the shows here on the Last Podcast Network. And we want to mention that the Dark Rider Cruiser goes on sale this Monday.
On Tuesday.
Goes on sale this Tuesday.
Yeah, it's by Priority Bikes. And I will say, I am a proud owner of a Priority bicycle. They're fucking amazing bicycles.
You like those bikes, right?
I love the bikes. No, I've had a Priority bike for like 2 years now. It's a, Priority bikes are fucking amazing. So I'm not just a client. I also am a client.
All right. Go cruising in a cruiser, you might find yourself a bruiser.
And they didn't even give me a bike for free. I bought that fucking thing.
Yep. Fantastic.
So that's how much I love Priority bikes. Go get the Dark Rider cruiser.
I just had to buy Black Rider. I just had to buy padded shorts for my exercise bike.
Because <you're laughs>
it hurts my asshole and my balls. Yeah. It's fun.
Little butt.
Yep. Yeah, his little butt.
And that bike doesn't even go anywhere.
No, it really doesn't. It's kind of funny. I actually want to see you on it.
Wendy sits and stares at me.
All right, everyone. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hugging.
Magustulations.
Hail me.
Look to the sky.
Look to the sky.
Look to the skies. Unless you're driving.
Then look at the road, please.
The road.
Don't look at your phones.
Don't look at your phone. No matter what.
No.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.